Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And friends, I got to tell you, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers can be really, really difficult. I think we all know that at this point. Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. And they have a platform, a whole platform, to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Now, today, friends, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite things to talk about. I love talking about culture and how to make your teams and your environments stronger through the fostering and facilitating of strong culture. And so we're going to be talking with Karen Huey. Karen is founder and CEO of Nucleus Training Solutions and KRHR. And she's an expertiest expert when it comes to creating strong culture, putting systems and processes in place to support your human beings and support your teams. And so I just want to give you a hearty welcome, Karen. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
You're welcome. And thanks for that introduction and welcome. It was nice.
You got it. I just gave Karen finger guns for those of you listening at home. well, Karen, I'm going to go ahead and just kick us off. And I'm just going to say, tell us about your journey, friend.
Okay. I'm going to try to give you the condensed version because it can get long.
I believe in you. You can do this.
I'm going to do it. All right. Now, my background has been in human resources and learning and development. I got a master's degree from Michigan State in human resource and labor relations with a focus on adult learning. So education, learning, of all the areas in human resources that we can do, and I've done just about all of it, that learning and education is what I've always gravitated towards. So I started out after Michigan State working for some very large companies like Chrysler Financial, in the HR and onboarding area. A couple iterations later, I was at OptumRx, which is a mail order pharmacy. And that's where I headed up the entire, most of what I've done later in my career, I've started new departments in new groups from scratch, which has been fun. And at Optum, we started the learning and development team that supported the pharmacy. So it's the pharmacists and the technicians and the actual fulfillment center. And if you've never seen an automated mail order pharmacy, it's amazing. It's really amazing. And I'm going to mention it because it comes into play later in what we're doing today. We started introducing training videos to deliver content because our training at the time was very long. It's pretty boring. It was not engaging or effective, and it was very expensive. And so we took, our new hire pharmacist training from 12 weeks down to 6. We can cut things in half, and using that video is very effective. A few iterations later, and I had the opportunity to then go back and work for a smaller company, setting up their entire HR department, made sense then because they bought and sold divisions. They didn't need me anymore because it turned into a small company again.
Wait, did you manage yourself out of a job?
I did. Yes. Yeah. I did.
That's a fun gift.
No,
yeah.
It was all good. It was a good transition. Right. It was kind of what should have happened, and it was good. It was good. But I then went on and I started working with an organization that wanted to build out an HR consulting firm. So at that point, I was working with small companies, not necessarily startups, but we'll talk about that. Companies that, because typically what happens with startups is they get going, they get busy, they develop their software or their platform so that they can help other companies hire software developers. And then they go back later and they put in their HR processes and infrastructure.
Right.
But working in that small area, but throughout this whole time, I'm still gravitating back toward that learning, that education. I've been an adjunct college instructor at Johnson County Community College for over 21 years. I don't know if I'd like to admit that or not. Human relations.
Love JCC.
Welcome. I'm giving my commercial plug for Johnson County Community.
Sure.
Great value.
Excellent educational institution. Yep.
Small classes.
Clearly so has excellent taste in professors, you know.
Well, thank you. And I'm not getting paid by JCCC to plug them, but yeah, any community college, it's a good value for students.
Okay.
Definitely. Then we had the opportunity, and I had the, you know, HR consulting firm, KRHR. Then I was really fortunate, and my son came to work with me. And so we always, as soon as we introduce ourselves, we like to clarify, he's my son. And a funny story, we went to a meeting in person, and we all the way through the meeting, and the gentleman we were meeting with, he looks at us, he's like, all right, well, got to ask. He said, I looked you up on LinkedIn, and couldn't quite tell. Is it mother, son, husband, wife? We busted up laughing.
Awkward.
My son. He's my son. So I'm very blessed that I get to work with him. And we had started a company that was a video-based online training company geared toward a different audience, high school athletes, because he played college golf. Had an unusual HR startup, true startup. Hadn't opened the doors yet. But they wanted their employee handbook. They wanted their interviewing processes. They wanted their checklist and all of their HR infrastructure. So we put that in place and they said, you know, you've created that training for the athletes in your other company. Can you make training videos for us? Because that's the core of what we do. We support adults with disabilities and we need a lot of training. We said, yeah, I can create training videos on any topic you want between the corporate trainings we've created, giving and receiving feedback and communications and interpersonal skills and, you know, pure functional job specific training. We can do it. So 17 training videos later, their folks are ready to go on being the ideal team member on how to provide great customer service, how to dress for success, how to make ice cream with batch freezer, which is a piece of equipment to make ice cream, very process driven. They opened their doors and we found out about some grant money. There was some CARES Act money out at the time. And so we cast a wide net and talked to all kinds of clients and said, we've got an opportunity. And, a lot of it can get paid for. We'll develop training videos for you. And so we launched Nucleus Training Solutions in 2021, even though we've been developing this type of training, full design training and specializing with those training videos. Been doing that since like 2010, but Nucleus Training Solutions started in 2021. So
Okay. That
was the somewhat short version of the story. It could have been a lot.
It's your life. So, of course you're going to take us on a whole journey, which you just did now. So I have a lot of questions about Nucleus and KRHR, but the first thing that I want to ask you, because I find this really interesting, and this is really pure curiosity on my part, but you mentioned that you have a focus on adult learning. And so my question is, how do you differentiate between learning systems for adults versus learning systems for children? Like, we talk a lot about K-12 education, things like that. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you have to be mindful of when you are training adults?
Okay, well, I'll get technical on you. There's pedagogy of how do you educate children? So more of your K-12. Time frame.
Yeah.
And I'm an expert in that area, so I can't tell you much about that. So
sure.
Andragogy is the study of how adults need to learn. And, you know, I haven't really studied it. It was a while ago that I was in graduate school, but there are still some fundamental principles. But with adults, different philosophy. You know, with children back in the day, and this is changing. So a lot of this is changing. Don't quote me on being absolutely current on pedagogy, but it was more so you could just lecture to kids. You know,
kids the teacher learning by rote. It was a lot of memorization.
Periodic.
And I think you're right. Like, I think that we are seeing a general shift to more experiential, hands-on education.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely. But that's the way it's always been for adults. Although I find it ironic because I have a lot of colleagues at the college level, not necessarily JCCC, because I've been at a few other colleges, but they will prep for class and they will write their lecture. And I just did the, you know, little hand quotes. That's typical in that setting. And they would create a PowerPoint and they would lecture and talk at the students. And think about it, Lauren, if I said, Lauren, would you like to sit down so I could give you a lecture? How do you feel about that?
That sounds absolutely unappealing.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's the approach we had at the college level. But with adults, we really need to make it very interactive, engaging. We do what in the industry we call chunking the information. So I give you a little bit of information. I let you ask questions and talk about it. And if there's other people there, if it's a class, we have some discussion and we'll have breakout sessions and you'll practice it and you'll get really good at that piece. And then we'll add some more. So have you ever, Lauren, have you taken yoga classes?
I have.
Okay. I'm glad you have. A lot of people have. They have not.
I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to say that I'm any good at it, but I have.
It's funny. Don't judge. Isn't that what they always say in yoga?
Like, I mean, the point is, like, you get out, you get active.
That's how a yoga class goes. We do a little bit. You get pretty good at it. You add on a little more, add on a little more. That's how we design the training. And we have knowledge checks along the way. Make sure they understand. Don't just, you know, talk at them and blow through the information fast and hope they caught on, because that's never worked for adults. So well-designed training, learning, and education, they have incorporate some of those aspects that I talked about. If somebody ever says, well, you know, I'm going to create some training. Okay, I'll create a slide deck. They're not really creating training. They're creating a slide deck. So
yeah,
I'm a little biased. So
It's interesting. I was actually in a meeting. So I'm on a citywide council kind of environment thing. And it was really interesting because I made the mistake of using the term curriculum. And apparently curriculum is like a super loaded word that has a lot of meaning attached to it. And really what I wanted to say was scaffolded learning, like creating a path of least resistance to understanding. But you know, there's just so much that you have to be cognizant of when you are trying to educate, you know, things like learning styles, things like messaging, things like consistency, and how do you determine that scaffolded learning, that growth, starting from a base and then building onto it. So I'm going to tell you, if you don't mind, just indulge me for a moment. I'm going to tell you a little story. So in a previous workplace, I worked for an organization that did education, primarily with students, high school age, sometimes middle school, on rare occasion, college students. But we also did some work with educators, adults, adult learners. And it was really fascinating to me because it was an innovation-based program that was kind of centered around design thinking. And I would administrate this program. And when we dealt with the students, we would get, so the students were challenged to come up with a solution to a problem. And with the students, we would always get like these crazy, innovative, moonshot thinking, like kind of solutions that we would talk about. But then when we would talk to adults and work with adults and ask them to do the same thing, they would really struggle. And I mean, why do you think that is?
Well,
I have an idea.
From the reading I do, and I read like crazy. One of my colleagues said, "Do you ever sleep? Because you're so well read."
Nice.
Yeah, I can sleep. That's healthy too with the yoga. But children, we have, especially younger children, we haven't told them no too many times.
Yes.
That won't work. You know, all those things.
I'm so happy that you picked that up. Because you're exactly right. Like, as soon as we would put a problem to the adults, we would have them, they would immediately start thinking of the reasons behind the no. Like, we don't have a budget for it. We don't have the people for it. We don't have the time.
Whereas we tried that before. before. It didn't work. Mm-hmm.
So I always found that super interesting. And so I've always been very, very attuned to the differences between learning in youth and learning in adults. So I did want to ask you that. Now, one of the things that I love about what you've done with Nucleus Training Solutions in particular is you've created scalability in a very vital process that often doesn't have much scalability. So by creating training videos, that means that you don't have to individually administrate the delivery of said video, right? You can record it. People can have content on demand. It was that kind of the thinking behind Nucleus Training Solutions, like creating that easy navigability for companies that wanted to offer training solutions?
Yes, there's a couple aspects to that, Lauren. You're right. There are so many great uses for training videos. That's why we love them, because it can be used as pre-work so people can get an idea or overview ahead of time. You can use it during a session instead of me talking too long, like I will in a large, 2-hour session or whatever.
I mean,
that
you're
might
doing
be.
Great so far, but I'll choose to believe you.
it's such a great reference afterwards as well.
Yeah.
However, my caveat is, and there may be some people who disagree with me, and that's okay. I haven't found from my experience, going back to Optum, working in the classrooms when I do teach a live class at the community college or other universities or teach a workshop, just a video itself oftentimes won't achieve the objective based on the topics that I'm usually teaching, interpersonal skills. Maybe a lengthy job specific training around, I've got to accomplish this task to do my job. Just in itself. Now, YouTube videos, if I need to go learn how to fix the leaky faucet, it's a pretty limited, task that I have. They work really well. Use it all the time. But for the things that we're teaching for job skills and success in the workplace, you can get a little bit of that, but especially the interpersonal skills. You've got to talk about why this will or will not work. When adults can exchange stories and examples, they start learning from each other. So my workshops are always, my training sessions are always very engaging so that they can talk and share because they learn. And adults thrive on that, sometimes more so than the children that you asked about earlier. But then we need to have a little time to practice and go back and try again, have some assessment, get some feedback, some constructive feedback. And so that's why oftentimes just a training video won't work, or just an 8-hour lecture class like we used to have. That didn't work. So people take it back, stick it on the shelf, or they watch the video and it won't work. So we need to combine more of that, all those different elements of learning, so that we can make sure that they're successful and be able to change the behavior and change the performance and the outcomes. And most of the time, it doesn't just happen by watching a video, reading a book, or going to a class. It takes time. So if we can design it that way, works better. And I can say a lot more, but I'm trying to do that succinct answering now. So
like I said, you're doing great. Well, and I love the intentionality that is put behind what sounds like it's put behind your process anyway. I mean, the fact is, like, in order to retain information. Like, people can read stuff, they can watch stuff, but in order to retain, you have to have context, you have to have repetition, you have to be able to like go back to the content and figure out how it aligns in your life, like your professional life, your personal life, whatever it is. So there are all kinds of factors that go into a person's ability to learn. Right.
Yes.
And often, like, as you said, often people they're not going to learn if you just like throw them a talk here or there. Like, and you have to fully integrate knowledge into someone's experience for them to not just retain it, but also implement, right? Figure out what that means for them. So that's super cool.
I didn't quite answer your question about the videos and being scalable. Here's a real benefit. So we were at a prospective client. So, well, they're our client. Now we're talking to them about the training. And we were talking to their lead trainer. And this is not the first time we've had this conversation. We have it all the time. Mm-hmm. So we're talking to the trainer. He said, would it be very helpful to you if you didn't have to deliver this content, you demonstrating and talking through how to do these tasks, to operate this piece of equipment? Would that be better if they could watch that in a video and then you can jump into here's the questions, here's the discussion, and they can start to demonstrate? It's like, oh my gosh, that would be great. Because he's and has to do that over and over and over. And then what happens is people tend to forget what they said, or they change the story or so forth. That on the job training, that can be a little bit difficult, because I change the story each time I do it based on what we ask and talk about. So that scalability, as you talked about with the videos, that is so key, because it shortens the time that it takes to deliver content and information and demonstrate how to do something and show it. It makes it consistent. It is the same every single time. And then the trainers or the leads or the managers or whomever is delivering training, especially if it's with an organization that does a lot of hiring and they have to do it over and over and over again, that starts to really engage those folks, because they look like, wow, this is great. I don't have to say that same thing over and over and over again. That's a relief. And now my company cares. You know, they're developing a different way to go about this, to give me some better tools, because I really want this new hire to be successful, or my colleague who's moving into a new job. And now I've got better tools to help them with that. So the videos can be used in so many different ways, relieves the trainer, it's consistent, it's the same, and shortens it up. So that's where the scalability really comes into play, as well as the engagement for all the folks.
Well, and speaking of tools that can help you do your job better, I want to talk to you a little bit about software development. Friends, I know software, nobody likes talking about building a tech team. Like, it's hard. It's constant recruitment. You don't have to do any of that. I'm here to tell you that finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably, as we like to say. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. Now that we have that out of the way, we are here with Karen Huey, founder and CEO of KRHR and Nucleus Training Solutions. And Karen, I want to take a step back with you just a little bit, and we're going to look at the 10,000 foot view. And I'm going to ask you, why is the work you do important?
Well, I'm passionate about that question. I appreciate you asking. It's interesting. I have this conversation quite often in talking with other consultants, talking with business owners, and I'm in the people business. I've always been in the people business. My passion is making sure that people have the tools, the knowledge, the skills, and the abilities to do their jobs well.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, I mean, we've got a real focus on lean manufacturing, ISO from back in my manufacturing days, Six Sigma, process improvement. Those are all different ways and different approaches to go in and make our business more efficient and more effective. And we're going to take waste out of our process so it doesn't take so long. And then we look at our expenses and how much does the equipment cost, and could a new piece of equipment make our jobs better? And we look at all these things and the finances and so forth, and we put all this in place. Yet it seems like we forget about who are the folks that are going to actually make all this happen. We're making these changes, we're making our business better. It's our people. And that's where it kind of stops. You know, there's process mapping companies out there, and they'll make a whole process map. And Lauren, I wish we did have the visual right now, because my process map is behind my desk.
Oh, man.
but I find it interesting that we then stop and we don't, you know, how do we teach the folks these new skills? I mean, especially if we're changing something in our organization, even if people know that the change is for the better, it's a change. And you talk about culture, most people don't like change, even though they know it's really going to be better. You're still changing. I knew how to do that with the software I was using before, and now it's new software, whatever it might be. So one of my, you know, my passions and my mission is to help business owners and leaders and directors of operations. So you've got to focus on the people part of it, because A, your folks are your most valuable and your most expensive asset in your entire company. They're the ones who are going to make it happen. They're going to make it or break it. And let's have more focus on that, because that's what we focus on, giving them the tools and the learning that they have so they can be successful. And it's often forgotten, and I find it bizarre. But my
It's interesting. I was thinking about this, like, so before, you know, we hit the record button, we do some pre-show prep, we talk to the guest, but we go through our set list. And I was thinking about one of the, I was actually thinking about the way in which we refer to our teams and our employees. And often we hear this phrase, human capital. And I kind of hate that phrase because I'm like, these are people. This is like, we can talk about assets and liabilities and we can talk about P&L, but when we're talking about people, like, let's do people the courtesy of actually referring to them as, you know, humans. So, and have respect for that designation, but you're absolutely right. Like, folks who are engaged, folks who have success trajectories, which often includes professional development, ongoing training, you know, these are the kinds of people that are successful for organizations. And we know the data empirically shows time and time again that turnover and toxic work environments, they are a cancer, they are a hindrance, and they hurt your business. And so anytime we talk to founders who are working to address that kind of human capital attitude or mentality, like, I love that you're humanizing something that has historically been very dehumanizing. You know, you're a number, you punch your clock, you go home. And that, I don't feel like that's really the case anymore. And so again, we're kind of just seeing these societal shifts, but you have created a mechanism to eradicate, or at the very least support, the removal of toxic workplace culture, or at least a piece of it in what you're doing. Do you agree with that?
Yes. I like what she said, a piece of it. What we do won't solve everything.
Sure.
It will take care of a lot of things.
There's no one-stop shop solution here.
No.
It's gotta be a multi-pronged attack for sure.
Yes. Multi-pronged all the time. But yeah, it really, you know, when you look at the culture, one of the things that we, and we, you know, talk with leaders, and I love talking to them all the time, like, you know, what is your learning culture? Do you have a focus on that? And I was blessed twice in my career to have really strong leadership. You know, it was when I was working for companies, once at Chrysler Financial and once at OptumRx, where I had senior leaders at both places that truly understood the value of investing in their folks. Because it's hard, because you can't quantify it quite so much. You know, if you put in the new self-check scanning machine in the grocery store, which are all over the place now, you know, you can see, okay, now I need that many fewer checkout people. And, you know, you can do the math and figure out. Yeah. How that happens. With learning, we can do a lot of analysis. I mentioned earlier, we took our, you know, pharmacist training, we cut it in half so we can reduce training time and costs. I can easily go into a company and say, we can reduce that training time, that training cost by 50%. And we can do the math and I can show savings. But some of it, like turnover, that's a little bit harder, because when somebody leaves a company, and for whatever reason, you know, there's a lot of reasons why they leave. Some of them leaders and owners have some control over and don't realize it always. But when they leave, they don't, the business doesn't write a check for that. So they don't feel the impact of writing the check for 50 to 200% of that employee's yearly salary.
Yeah.
Or as Sherm said most recently, you know, 6 to 9 months worth. So that's, you know, 50 to 75%, somewhere in there. It's a significant number. If somebody's making 100,000 per year, at, you know, one of your key leaders, and they depart, probably 75%, $75,000 just came off your bottom line, but they don't write a check, so they don't feel it.
Right, right. It's those hidden costs that you're so mindful of.
Yeah, yeah. And I will oftentimes, I'll talk to leaders, I'll be at a group, whatever the setting is, and I'll ask them, do you know how much it costs you when you have turnover? And I'm amazed at how many very successful business people oftentimes don't know that. So I try to.
Yeah, and I mean, but think about like the far-reaching implications. Like, anytime you lose a team member, and that could be like they decided proactively to go to greener pastures, or maybe they got fired, or, you know, whatever it is, like, you're losing a lot. You're not just losing money, you're losing institutional knowledge, you're, you know, losing pieces of culture, because the individuals contribute to culture as a whole. You know, you're losing a lot, potentially. So anything that we can do to work on that retention piece, not just the attraction of talent, but the retention of talent, that's going to be so key for startup founders, particularly like those early stage founders who, like, you've got three employees working for you. If you lose one, man, that's tough. So I love that. You said something that I found really, really interesting, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. But you mentioned that you had been very blessed to work for two leaders and within two environments where you felt that cultural support. What did that look like and feel like to you?
It was great. I mean, I can remember it like it was yesterday because it was a while ago. I was with Chrysler Financial. We had three senior VPs, just the way organizationally it was structured, and I won't go into all that, it doesn't matter. And they said, you know, these call centers that we have are where the whole career starts. So we've got to make this a great experience. Well, I do have to tell you, it's kind of funny. I came to town, we had a call center. So Chrysler Financial, they financed automobiles. And in the call center, you would call people if they were past due on their car payments. We hired collectors. That was the first job to start your career with the company. And we hired folks with college degrees, so recent grads. And we hired these college graduates to come in and work second shift as a collector calling people on their past due car payments. Not the career most college grads want to have.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
The only thing I was good at, that second shift turned into a benefit because our second shift was 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. Well, what do college students do at 10 p.m.? They go out. And then right. What do they do the next morning after being out late? They sleep in. So I thought it was a big detriment. It turned into one of the biggest selling features that I had to work for.
Yeah. Do you remember those days? I barely remember those days. Now it's like 10 o'clock and I'm like, time for bed.
Oh, yeah. That whole New Year's Eve thing? Yeah, it's still 10 o'clock. Yeah. Okay, so a little squirrel, or I squirreled on you, but but we had these three senior leaders. They said, you know, it's tough to recruit folks for this, and we expect a lot of them. We move them all the time, but we've got to make this a good opportunity so they can grow their career because we want them to stick around. So we hired a consulting company who helped us create a one-year onboarding program, and then after the 1 year, they graduated into what we called Navigate, where they could chart their own course. And you know, I still have borrowed some aspects of that I share with clients today. So this big company approach that, you know, I can share with not so big of companies, but they really were committed to that. And then they said, when we come in, we want our culture to be such that people enjoy their jobs. They're doing a good job. Yeah, it's a tough job. And it's not glamorous or exciting. And so one of the senior VPs said, when I come into the call center, I want to see a skip in everybody's step. And there was like eight of us senior leaders there. Like, okay, what does that look like to you, Paul? He said, I don't know, but I'll know it when I see it. Now go make it happen.
I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but there's not a lot of guidance in there.
No, it was a little tough, but we got it. I mean, we wanted to make it a good place to work, a place where we got a lot of feedback from people, communicated with people, gave them the tools and the learning and the training they needed to then be able to thrive in their careers. And not everybody would stay, and we knew it. And that's okay, because there's only so many places you can go. But they were committed to it. And they would come in and they would listen to presentations from our new hires after 6 months. And the senior leaders demonstrated and walked the talk, the interest, the commitment, and the passion they had for their folks. And it made a difference. Huge difference.
I love that. So what I'm hearing, because I don't know that there's like any one particular roadmap. I mean, like I said, there's not one thing that you can do to impact your company's culture. There are a million little things that you have to do. But what I'm hearing intentionality coming out. Like, you know, the tactics are going to vary from organization to organization, and it's going to, you know, there are all kinds of variables in there. But the fact is, like, as long as you are intentional about creating your culture before your culture is created for you, because it will be, but, you know, as long as you are mindful, you know, that's really important. What I did not hear, Karen, I didn't hear anything about beer pong Fridays. I didn't hear anything about foosball tables. that's not culture, right?
Yeah.
And I think,
and the good news is a lot of that has gone out of style. So we're not doing so much anymore, thank goodness.
Well, and I'm super glad to hear that. But like, I do know founders to this day who they're like, they are very confident that like, if we give out the swag and we do all the like cool, fun, funky stuff, people are going to stick around. And the fact is, like, people don't stick around for that kind of stuff. They stick around for opportunity. They stick around for, you know, a clear career trajectory, like a success path. They stick around for managers that support them. And I want to talk to you about psychological safety, because training videos and all of the consulting that you do, really, you know, you it comes back to that feeling of psychological safety. Are you in an environment where you feel like you have the opportunity to learn, to take on new skills and new responsibilities? Are you in an environment where you feel comfortable expressing dissatisfaction or, you know, pointing out areas for improvement? Are you working with people who are invested in your success? I mean, there are a lot of factors. I want to talk to you a little bit about psychological safety and what that means specifically as we're talking about things like turnover and retention. You know, how important do you think psychological safety is to that retention piece?
Oh, it's critical. You know, employees, they or team members, associates, whatever we want to call them, they need to know that they're going to have opportunities. I've got a statistic for you. So I told you all these pieces.
Yay!
Of paper.
Yay! So, I love statistics. Bring them on.
Yep. So LinkedIn found that 94% of employees said they would stay at a company longer if it invested in their career development. And so people want to say, okay, you have a plan. I can grow. It's really important, even more so today, the old adage where people would come in to a company, they would pay their dues. They would, you know, go through the grind so they can move up in the company. Employees today, that's not okay for them.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The leaders who can adapt and change for what employees need are more successful. Now, I give it that a little caveat. I am quite certain that the veteran generation, you know, we've got the veterans and the baby boomers and the Generation X, Generation Y, Generation Z. I'm quite certain the veterans said the same thing about the baby boomers, that, oh my gosh, you know, what are these boomers doing? And they, you know, they don't have a work ethic and they do things so differently and they don't do it right.
Yeah,
but it was interesting. In this environment where it's been very difficult for employers to attract and retain top talent. And, you know, for quite a while, it's been across the board. We're seeing some changes in there, you know, high tech, software, you know, we're seeing some layoffs at very large companies, but there's still pockets that are going to continue to have a hard time hiring. But we were having a roundtable discussion with a group, and, you know, one of the leaders, and he was a seasoned leader. He'd been around for a while with his company. He's like, you know, this is the way I operate and this is the way I want to do this. And I don't understand why when people are, you know, applying for a job, they want to communicate by text and you know, they're doing all these different things. And I didn't even have to say it. Another one of the leaders, very successful business owner, said, well, we have to change with the times. That's how they communicate best. We need to meet them where they are. The first one kind of looked at him kind of funny, but I've seen that time and time again. Again, it's that change and it's different. But if you want to be successful as a leader, and we were talking about at whatever stage a company is in, whether it is a startup, because this is, you know, Startup Hustle, or, you know, a company that's been around for a long time, you have to understand your employees. You need to understand their needs, what's going on with them. Unfortunately, the days of work was work, home was home, never shall the two meet. Those days are long gone. Home life is impacting us now, and employers need to be open to that. I'm not saying just give it a free for all and willy nilly, and whenever you want to come to work, great, do it, and, you know, do whatever you want. But employers who do care, who do, let me wrap a bow around this because I just got long winded, who showed they care about their employees' well-being inside and outside of work, as well as their development and growth and their contribution to doing something important in their company, whatever that is that you're doing, it's important. When they can show that, their employees are going to get on board and they will be with them 100% of the way. if they don't, employees are just going to look for the next best thing, like you said, or the grass is greener on the other side. So it's a simple approach to think about, but it's really hard to execute for leaders because I get it. They get busy and yeah.
So Karen, I forewarned you that I was going to do this and I'm going to ask you to give away a little bit of your treasure. I know that you're a consultant and of course, we're going to encourage all of our listeners. If you have questions or if you want to engage with Karen and if you want to talk about training solutions and HR practices and all that good stuff, certainly do that. We're going to put links to Nucleus Learning and we're going to, I'm sorry, KRHR and Nucleus Training Solutions. We're going to put those in the show notes. But for the folks playing at home, what are some best practices, tips and tricks you can give folks that they can implement today to improve their culture, improve their retention, improve those numbers, while at the same time helping out their teams and placing priority on their teams?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I have had a lot of clients find to be very helpful is to conduct a culture survey. There's all kinds of them out there. Some are very expensive and some are not so expensive. Some are very simple, some are very complex. I'm always an advocate of less expensive and less complex. But a culture survey, that can help you find out what your folks are thinking because they're anonymous. So people are oftentimes more comfortable really expressing their feelings, their thoughts or suggestions. So that's one thing that a lot of companies will find very helpful. Now, the key is then you have to communicate your findings and you have to take action on that as well. There's nothing worse than having a survey and then you don't tell anybody everything. So be committed to it. If somebody doesn't have, you know, maybe the budget or the wherewithal to conduct a culture survey, start creating some types of regular communication cadence with your folks. And I'm going to give you some different ideas because that can look very different. Like you said, Lauren, the tactics can be different, but there's still some basics that every organization needs. And you know what that includes is regular communication. If you did a culture survey, they always come back and they say, we want more communication. So that can be one-on-one meetings with your staff, you know, whoever your direct reports are, carve out some time and you can ask them, what do they need and how often and what's important to them for that amount of time. You can have team meetings. And I'm an advocate of, you kind of flex those, change them for the needs of the team. When I was at OptumRx and our team was new, it was growing. We were adding people every other week. You know, we went from one person to 39 in a short amount of time. We had what we called lightning rounds or stand-up meetings. And so we were small. We were about 10 people at the time. We all stood there. We got a minute. I timed us. And people could talk about what they're working on, what they needed help with. And then, you know, Joe and Susan would say, oh, good. You know, Susan say, I can help you with that, Joe. We'll take it offline. And so we would do that. So everybody knew what was going on. And then eventually we didn't need them anymore. And we stopped having the meetings. Maybe an employer has a town hall meeting. You bring everybody together on a regular basis. You know, whatever works for your organization, you can have a combination.
Yeah.
Another thing I would do is recognition. People want to know they're doing a good job, right?
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. But here's my caveat for that one. Make sure you are providing recognition in a way that's comfortable for your team.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is I had a business owner, awesome business owner, dedicated to the business, his team, doing the right things. And they had Friday meetings and he would, you know, announce various kudos and good jobs and all sorts of things. And he would announce, you know, this in front of everybody and say, Bob did this or Harold did that or Jane did this. I said, well, are you sure Bob and Jane are comfortable with you congratulating them in front of everybody? And he said, well, yeah, everybody likes to be congratulated in front of everybody.
Nope.
Not everybody does. Some people are mortified by that. So
think about the folks who are on your team who, like, when you go out to dinner on your birthday, like, they don't want people to be clapping and singing the happy birthday song because it's too much attention. It's so awkward.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the advice I give to people all the time is if you're not sure about something, you're not sure how to communicate, or you're not sure how to recognize them, and there's lots of ways to recognize them. It's so simple. Just ask them one off. Lauren, how do you prefer? You know, if it's your birthday, do you want a big birthday celebration? You might say, yeah, I want balloons and everything. You might say,
I mean, I do. I love words of affirmation, particularly of the public variety. But that being said, like, I am one person. And yeah, like, I know I used to work with a bunch of developers. And, like, developers are not known for being the most outgoing folks. Right. And so, like, as a general group, it was like, well, let's not make them uncomfortable. Can't call them out publicly. But, you know, just that even that private moment, like, pull you aside. Hey, just to let you know, you're doing a great job. Thank you. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
We're talking about like meeting people at their level, meeting people where they're at. I love that.
Yeah, well, because
Go ahead.
I was just saying, we always talk about, you know, in both worlds, the HR and the learning. As a business owner, as an employer, as a leader, whatever that looks like, your role is to make sure your team has a safe and comfortable work environment. And so make sure that you're asking and you're ensuring that that environment is good, but recognizing them is so important. People need to hear that they're doing a good job. And then you've got, another thing. Give the feedback.
You're giving away all the tips. All right. One more.
Because again, this is all, it's great. Like when we have, you know, training classes, we'll practice this stuff and we'll do it. I'm like, yeah, it works really great here. Now you have to go implement it. It's easier said than done, but I'm hoping getting some nuggets in people's heads. If you can just take one and go start working on it, that's great. But giving constructive feedback. And what I would ask you to do is take the word criticism out of your vocabulary. Do not ever do that, because I'm going to ask you again, Lauren, like I did earlier. Lauren, do you want to have a constructive criticism discussion?
Oh my God, that sounds terrible.
Right. How about, I would like to have a feedback discussion with you. You've been doing some really great work on the podcast and the speakers you've been bringing on. And I think we can make it even better with a couple of ideas I have for you. Would you like to have a discussion about that?
Ooh, I would love to have that discussion.
Okay, great.
Well, and I think most people like inherently want to improve and want to get better, but it's in human nature to get defensive or, you know, to be resistant to that kind of confrontational style. Like nobody likes hearing that they're not doing like a perfect job or what have you. But when it's couched right, it becomes an opportunity rather than a, you know, something that could hurt you to your soul, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I don't recommend the old sandwich technique. Some people used to teach that. Lauren,
compliment sandwich.
Great to talk with you today. But you need to really, you know, make sure that it's a longer duration or whatever that may be. And I look forward to the next time meeting with you. We remember the first thing that somebody says and the last. We don't remember things in the middle. And that's the meat of what we need to change. So don't sandwich it is for my recommendation.
All right. No compliment sandwich. Let's not do that. So let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you the human question. And you said that you read a lot. And so I want to explore that with you a little bit because I love readers. For those of you who haven't seen this, Karen got to see a little bit of it. My office is just like packed with books. I love books. I love reading. So talk to us about some of the things that you're reading right now. What are you interested in?
It runs the gamut. If I don't want to think too hard, I like some good, you know, nonfiction novels. I've found some new authors. So that's good. I'm fortunate I can read really fast. So over one of the long weekends we had, I read two novels, but you know, I just kind of blow through them. But I also read a lot of books like, you know, Patrick Lencioni. I think he has fabulous leadership books. You know, book wise, I read a lot of periodicals, Wall Street Journal, Pew Research, Gallup. Gallup I love because they do so much research around engagement and, you know, retention and so forth. And of course, you know, you have to go with your associations. So SHRM, Society for Human Resource Management, and ATD is the Association for Training and Development. Because always have to keep current on, you know, what you're doing in your vocation. I'm always either that I'm reading it or I'm listening to it. You know, a lot of them now they record it with a computer, but it's okay. So I get on the elliptical at the gym and I listen to the Wall Street Journal.
Nice. Well, very cool. You know, I got to tell you, Karen, it has been a blast having you on the show. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us and for sharing so much of your wisdom. Like I always look forward to thinking about our guests listening to these episodes and, like, you know, learning all kinds of cool stuff and hearing about new founders. And so this was a really good one. But thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I also thank you for inviting me onto the show. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Good. Oh, I'm so glad. Well, and something else that we enjoy, friends, we enjoy Full Scale. I know, you know, that they have my heart. And speaking of retention, I always find this really interesting. But whenever I talk to Matt DeCourcy about Full Scale, one of the things that he always, you know, mentions is the fact that they have extreme employee retention at their location because Matt, you know, they treat their teams well. And they had like, they have people who want to stay with them. So if you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders, Full Scale can help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and then let the platform match you up with fully vetted, highly experienced software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Full Scale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. And of course, my friends, I would be remiss if I did not point you to our online communities. You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot, we do Startup Hustle for you. You know, all of the hosts are founders. We all have our own founder journeys, but we want to hear your thoughts. So connect with us. We have a chat group on Facebook. We have a LinkedIn page. We have a YouTube channel. But, you know, feel free to reach out to us and let us know what you want to hear and what founders you want to hear from. We love those suggestions because it helps us do our job better. So definitely do that. And please keep on coming back. We love that you listen to us week after week. We will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.